Kuzusangpula, I'm Sonam Yangjin. Welcome to the RIGS podcast. For a country with a small population, herd mentality in business and many other areas could prove detrimental and lead to market bubbles. A case in point, it has been found that the burgeoning number of restaurants across the country is beyond what our current population can support for a sustainable growth. Following the herd can sometimes limit the exploration of untapped markets and hinder innovation and creative problem solving. It has therefore become even more critical to break past the conventional boundaries of doing business and adopt innovative business models by capitalizing on emerging trends for a successful venture. Mr. Tandin Doji, the CEO of Education Pro, started from scratch and has built a name and brand for himself. In a successful entrepreneurial venture, he has managed to identify new growth opportunities to meet customer needs and think strategically beyond the box despite not being the first in the business. He is an alumnus of Murdoch University in Perth in Western Australia and Sheerabzi College in Bhutan. He is also the head of the Kingston International College in Perth and also one of the founders of the Bhutanese language school there.
Tandin sir, welcome to the RIGS podcast. Thank you so much for finally being able to be with us today after having to reschedule the interview for several months given your very busy life. But I'm glad we are able to have this conversation today. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Okay, thank you so much, Sonam, having me on the RIGS podcast. And I'm really sorry, but finally, I'm very glad that we were able to make this happen.
Likewise. So given that there's a lot of curiosity and interest around you, could you please tell us something about yourself and the company you manage? What really sparked your interest in business?
To start with my introduction, by profession, I am a computer programmer back then. I have a bachelor's degree of computer science from Sheerabzi College and postgrad in Linux for advanced networking from India. Later, I also completed a business degree in Australia, followed by an accounting qualification. And this is what has led into a shift in my professional career. Today, I am also an associate CPA, certified practicing accountant, a professional body in Australia, which is equivalent to CA or to IPA, Institute of Public Accounts. By the way, Education Pro is not only the business that I've developed. I have also an investment company called PTC Investment in Australia. I have another company in United Kingdom called Blue Puppy. And through Blue Puppy, what we do is labor hiring and management of care homes and retirement living. It is very, very popular in the Western countries. And I also co-own Kingston International College. And getting into what has driven me to do a business is not by coincidence. I come from a computer background. I like processes. I like systems. And I like things to be well organized. And before I started, I worked in a different trades in various capacities, ranging from business development manager for a multinational company and as low as laborers like any other international students in Australia. However, to my calculation, I cannot be successful or rich or whatever we call it if I haven't started any business.
Les, from what I heard from some of your college mates, you have had that entrepreneurial mindset and skills even during your college days. In the sense, I heard that you used to arrange buses for your college mates to travel back home, especially in absence of a reliable public transportation then, and that was how you used to generate pocket money for yourself. Is it true, La?
The entrepreneurship skills and the drive was within me for a long time, which I couldn't realize until I started my own. But looking back into what I have been doing, organizing of buses is one of its kind. But I would say that I am the first one in Bhutan who have organized a talent competition in Kanglung. And that time, I have also requested Bhutan Broadcasting Service in Tashkang Bureau to cover our program nationwide. Because of which, yeah, we have been able to make some money and then contribute to the culture club. And that's one of that sort. And also, I have produced one music album. I have collaborated with few of my friends to organize music, and some of my friends are also engaged in writing songs. I have also written songs myself. And then I was actively engaged in marketing activities, born from home to home, selling audio cassettes myself. And I think because of which I was able to make a decent earning. But I would say that until I complete my qualification, I was not able to realize that the entrepreneurship skills were within me from long time.
Nice. So why do you think you are a successful businessman now? What are some of the factors that contributed to your success? I've also mentioned earlier in my introduction that your business was not the first, given that there were several much established education consultancies before yours. But there is something innovative about your business strategy. So what really sets your business strategy apart from others?
When it comes to the measurement of success, I have no comments or comparisons to be made in order for me to be calling as a very successful businessman in Bhutan. But for someone like me who have started everything from scratch, and some of the ground attempts that I've made have changed the overall landscape of doing business in Bhutan. And this is what I'm proud about. And my expertise comes from my qualification in businesses. There are two decisions that you need to get it correct. And I treat this as the basic funders of doing businesses. One is, where do you finance from? And what kind of investment you are engaging in? So finance meaning how you raise a fund to conduct a business. Should it be loaned or relying on an equity investment or venture capitalism, sale of an idea and let someone who has finance do the investment or private lending or a combination of it? Based on the business model, it must be correct. And it has to be purely based on the calculations, not on the assumption basis. So this is where I was able to get it correct. Similarly, when it comes to investment, it must be aligned with the flows and train of the market behavior. It must relate to scientifically proven hypothesis. And this is what I have been working on. Huge numbers, even thousands and thousands of students have been availing the services from our company. And when it comes to conducting a business, yes, of course, you need to have high IQ, which is very important. But more interestingly, more than IQ, I feel EQ is important as well, because you need to understand the need of your customers. And I don't have any problem being able to connect with my customers, be able to bond with my customers so that they also feel that we are taking care of them. And moreover, my business strategies are never static. And it's not localized to one geographical boundary. Now I'm in Australia and in UK. But if I see there is a business in Japan, I'll go there. If there is a business in China, I'll definitely go there. And I have designed a system and process that is one size fit all. Some of my business strategies are, I would say that, highly scalable. Which means if there is one client, yes, we can still use this system. But if we have thousands and thousands of clients coming in also, we have designed a process whereby we will be able to cater to too many. Yeah, these are some of the specifications that I do think that I possess.
Nice. What are some of the challenges that you faced along the journey as a young businessman? It can also be in terms of the rules and regulations when it comes to doing business in Bhutan.
Coming from a country like Bhutan, where the access to the market size, which is very small. And even if you are able to capitalize 100% on the market, you won't gain much from that small population. But that is not something that has stopped me. I was able to design products and services which actually serves the purpose of the customers. And that should be the main purpose of conducting business. When I started my education business there, I have actually invited a FDI company to come and do investment there. Not only in terms of monetary, but FDI can mean hiring of labor experts. For example, there are so many registered migration agents who are coming from Australia and then operating worldwide, which Bhutan has no capacity in isolation. So the regulators, they thought that education consultancy business is very simple, not that complex in nature. So that kind of mentality, and there is no much support from the government. And I said, if we have a registered migration agent running a business in Bhutan through a FDI mode, our Bhutanese individuals will definitely benefit out of this. When you really drill down into that kind of situations, I have seen that there are a lot of skilled laborers, for example, ICT professionals, accounting professionals, engineering professionals in Bhutan. They come to Australia directly through other pathways like permanent residency. And for a small country like Bhutan, small economy like Bhutan, apart from the export of hydroelectricity and tourism, and then a little bit of exports, when I really looked into that nature of the business, I've seen a potential. Instead of applying for a student visa where the investment is very huge, the outward remittance is also very huge. So instead of going through a student visa programs, I thought that maybe, yeah, we should be able to send a few of the professionals through migration programs, whereby our country will be benefiting from the foreign remittance, and it is as good as a labor export. But I haven't received any support. And in Bhutan, I feel that the market is not really protected, meaning because of the herd mentality that we being very good in one trade, one business, everyone wanted to do that. And that is the biggest problem. And whenever the government puts a red tag on this, people are not happy about that. And I do respect that on the government decisions. But what government has to realize is, I think there should be a mechanism to protect the market well. And in one of the audiences that His Majesty have granted upon me, I can clearly remember His Majesty's wisdom. And His Majesty spelled out, in order for any restaurant business to survive in the world, we need to maintain a seller and buyer ratio of 1:2,000. For every restaurant, we need to have at least 2,000 potential customers. Then only that restaurant is going to survive. But the fact is, in Bhutan, we have only 200 potential customers for one restaurant. Now the survival is a big question. And this actually made me realize why our government is not protecting the businesses like any other countries does. Yes, of course, when it comes to conducting of businesses, there has to be a free market whereby everyone have access to. But certain businesses, education-related business, be it be tourism, be it medical-related services, I think there has to be a mechanism to protect the market entry. And BLS, the Statistics Bureau of United States of America, shows that if we are not protecting the market, there are only 25% of new businesses making to 15 years into operations. Because more interestingly, because of the globalization now, technology-driven economy, things have become very volatile. And there is also a projection and assumptions that within 50 years, 60% of the businesses will die. And the fun fact is 70% of the business have not yet started. This means there are so many people who come to the market, who enter to the market just to try the luck and die. And this train will continue. So bringing this into the context of Bhutan, the main challenges of doing business is coming from regulators lacking direction. This is what I personally feel. And when it comes to government authorities, and I think there is a misinterpretation. Sometimes the civil servants, as soon as they get into the job, they feel that they are a symbol of authority. But instead, for a private sector to survive, that mentality from the government regulator has to change. Instead of regulating, it has to be 70% support towards conducting business and 30% regulation and compliance. But in our case, it's just vice versa. I'm not putting a blame on that. But the main confusion comes from the department's role being overlapped on each other. And then they are not working in harmony. This actually can be seen by the way that the delay in the process of even getting a business license in Bhutan. That also requires submission of same documents again and again here and there. And then documents getting lost is no surprise too. So these are the main challenges.
Given your bad experience with some of our rules and regulations in place, did you try to, what was the reservation from the government side, from the regulator side to your proposal? Did you try to like dig into it? At the moment, there's a grave concern on losing the critical workforce of the nation. And there is somehow a very fine line between, promoting the growth of the private sector and also upholding national interest. How do you think the government can sail through such conundrum?
So when it comes to fixation, I think we have to be aware of whether we must follow socialism or we should follow the communism method. But when you say communism or socialism, I don't think one system serves both. So there has to be a system whereby the businesses need to be rooted through. Then I think this practice would best serve us. And then I went with a lot of proposals to get things changed. But looks like the officials, everyone wants to take a safe seat. This is what I've seen. If something is not written in the book, that means we cannot do anything else. I was putting a lot of argument. As long as it is serving the purpose, as long as it is not harming anything, I think these are some gray areas. These are some thin lines where we can work around. So yes, there are so many things that we can actually work on, but I don't know how to go about it.
Coming to the hot topic of Australian Rush, I feel that your job sort of offers a vantage point to understand the mass exodus. Also, your consultancies are involved in facilitating the process, and you are also mostly based in Australia. So how do you think we can work that in our favor, that the exodus in the future?
People leaving the country in big numbers, sometimes it's concerning me also. But taking a close look at the situation, there is always a good side and bad side of it. Good side of it is I've already indicated that, in terms of export capability for small nation like Bhutan, other than hydroelectricity and tourism, there is nothing much we can do. But good thing about is we have a good number of population who is educated in English. I think this is one of the most advantages that Bhutan can capitalize on. For example, Thailand, Vietnam, the neighboring countries with a big population, and even Indonesia also. They are the fourth most populous country in the world. And if you go and do the fact check on the number of people being able to speak English and nationally recognized foreign language, we could do something better than them in terms of delivering services. What do I mean by saying this is, if we also try to explore service economy, I think this is where we could probably do well. But the thing is that we need to have a kind of exposure which can be gained through upskilling. At the moment, DSP is one of its kind. And people coming to Australia or Canada or UK under private initiative, getting a good quality education, good exposure, and then returning home. So if these things are happening, this is a very good side of people going out of our country. And that's very advantage on our side. But more interestingly, the Dane is saying that there are also highly skilled civil servants leaving the system here, which is a bit concerning to me, and it will have a far-reaching consequences in the long run. But government changing their regulatory approach and then the attaching into a lot of financial incentives, I think that is also helping in some ways. But foreign remittance and all, how it should motivate our people who are working abroad to send money home so that we also have some advantage. They are also good and bad, but financial incentives is one of the methods that the system in our favor, number one. Number two, the major concern is the highly experienced and skilled civil servants leaving the system, pay increment, and the cycle of the Royal Civil Service examinations being changed, a number of the attempts that they can sit for preliminary examinations. This would definitely help our country going further.
How confident are you that the people who migrate right now will return home after maybe they complete their education or after at least a few years' time gaining exposure there? Do you think they'll return home to do something impactful?
Someone says, it's always home is the best. Bhutan is the best country in the world to live because things are very slow going there, no pressure, clean environment surrounding us, like other countries who have social unrest situations. We don't have that kind of situation. And then looking from that forefront, I do believe that people will definitely return. But if people are not returning to our country, I would say mainly for two reasons. Number one, now they are being accompanied by their dependent children, who feels that Australia is their home country, America is their home country, United Kingdom is home country, or Canada. So that can be one of the major concerns, that they won't be able to reintegrate to the main education system. And in order for any children in Bhutan to pass one level of education, they have to compulsorily pass Dzongkha unit or Dzongkha component, without which they won't be able to pass. But here, because they are not in touch with Dzongkha language and it is not regulated in the first place. And then if children of that sort needs to return home, I don't think that they will be able to reintegrate into our main education system. For that purposes, parents may not be able to return there. And now the visa systems are relaxed here, and because of which I think people also feel relaxed. And then now everyone knows that getting permanent residency is a possibility here. And because of which they would love to do a course which is on a skilled list. And then by doing this, not many are having a good amount of saving to return home, which primarily they came with the intention. Until and unless we are able to play well in terms of economy by government intervention. For example, the land prices or property prices in Thimphu is unregulated and it's very, very expensive. Much expensive than to buy a property here in Australia. Here in Australia, I would say that if you have a decent job, anyone can afford to have a home here, which is not in Bhutan. So because of which, I have a fear that people may not be returning. But as long as we are able to fix these two, Bhutan is the best country to live.
Yes, it is quite concerning to know that the future of Bhutan, our youth who travel outside, especially the kids who are born there, think that their country is the USA, Canada, Australia, anywhere but Bhutan, right? Like, one consolation and comfort that I'm sure many parents seek is the Gelsung National Service, since children aged 18 will be required to return home for the training. Hopefully that will be able to change the mindset of our future generations. So just out of curiosity, what has been the enrollment like in the Bhutanese language school in Perth?
Yes, so now I would definitely say that there would be more than 1,000 or 2,000 dependent children currently here in Australia. But enrollment, the strange thing is there were around 200 students turning out. And more so is when we actually started rolling out our program, students are not readily catching up, firstly. Secondly, when we started delivering the courses here, parents are also not showing that keen interest and support. So the enrollment exact figure is very hard to predict. Some come, some don't come. And because of which, in consultation with our principal here, we have made a decision to suspend for some time so that we can rework on the curriculum if it is too tough for our children to pass. Initially, when we started this, we were keenly interested and more focused on passing on four skill sets, speaking, reading, writing, and listening, Dzongkha component, as if. If someone is required to return home, they will be able to pass the level of the classes that they are enrolled when they are in Bhutan. And situation is such that the children would be studying in year 9 or year 10 or year 7 or year 6 without basic Dzongkha foundations. Number one, who is right on track? Who is starting from pre-primary in terms of English education, in terms of Dzongkha education also? As I have mentioned, there are some students who are actually studying in year 8 or year 11, but their Dzongkha is not even pre-primary level. So we have been delivering our pass-track courses. Frankly speaking, you know, in Bhutan also, if you have Dzongkha qualification, there is nothing much you can do unless it is for the reason of the sovereignty of the country, being able to call ourselves as Dup or Bhutanese, being able to speak Dzongkha. Not much of personal benefits. So maybe people are not interested because this is not result-oriented in terms of the career height, in terms of job prospects. I think we need to change the mentality also.
Yes, thank you for the information. Now, coming back to the point, would you be comfortable to share your next move? I mean, where do you intend to bet your money next?
I'm always not predictable, but education is my passion and this is where I'm good at. And because I have been into this business for quite long now, and I have a good track record of delivering a successful result. I think I have made a very significant progress in Bhutan. Everyone knows that, yes, Education Pro is a reliable, trustworthy service provider. And then not only in Bhutan, now people from other parts of the world We are also operating in Malaysia now. We do have office close to Brunei. We are also operating from Philippines. We will be going very high in terms of education sector. That is not all alone. A vocational education sector is one of the very, very biggest market elsewhere, which we are also working towards. We also have an investment company. So there are a lot of potential investors, be it here in Australia or other international financing banks. We do have access to that. To my next move, I'm very, very calculative, but I don't know in what form I may come.
I feel like you must have a good team under your leadership to help lead the business, or you have your business in several countries. So how do you manage to build and nurture a strong team that you can trust in business?
So when it comes to team building, I would say there is one secret, and that is the basic building block. You can have one design error in team development that can have catastrophic disaster. That is I. I am the owner of the business. I am the boss. I should have 100% stake in this business. And anything that relates to I, the moment you start thinking that this business belongs to me, this is mine, I think this is where the problem is. But in my case, I've not treated my business as mine. My employees, my team members, they also have equal stake. I wouldn't be happy myself being able to drive a luxury car, be in the position to live in a very luxurious house. No, if my team members are suffering, then I'm equally responsible for that, because they are working for that company where they are supposed to get a fair share. So I have designed a process whereby everyone has an equal stake based on their contributing capability. So I have developed a process where everyone has an equal stake, where everyone is responsible, and we are guided by a proper structure. From the day one, we have a very, very good functioning board of trustees, a management committee, and the team members headed by the different heads of the department. And my team members are located all across, not only in Bhutan. I have my big research and development team members who are even working from United Kingdom. Some are even working from Arab country. Some are based in Philippines. Some are based in Australia. We have access to a single independent platform. So everyone is responsible to update this system on a regular basis. And we exactly know what's happening. So there is a check and balance in the system. As long as that is there, and then there is nothing as such that you cannot trust to your team members. And I have full confidence in my team members. We are guided by a roadmap, which is navigated through a system. And my team members are the greatest asset that I would definitely see if I have something. They are my cohort.
Yes. I also heard that when someone asked you what would you wish for, you said that you wish there were more than 24 hours in a day. So why would you wish for more than 24 hours in a day?
Saram, this is something beyond the law of nature. For me, I think I deserve this success because I have worked for it. And for me, there is no Saturday or Sunday. There is no day or night. Wherever I go, I'm always with my computer. Wherever I can be, I always make sure that I attend to a matter of urgency. But when you are able to do so many things by yourself, and now you are not in the position to replicate, you feel there is a need for time. You feel there is a shortage of time. When I started, it was actually 7 years straight through. No holiday, no Saturday, no Sunday, nothing. And I was working around the clock. And this is where I felt there should be something, just copy-paste my ideas. Sometimes you are in a situation where your team members are not able to follow your vision, where your team members are not able to replicate the ideas. So sometimes you feel very frustrated. So maybe out of desperation, when I see the opportunities flipping from my hand without being able to manage on time. So this is where I felt, yes, there should be more than 24 hours, which is very strange feeling, by the way.
So that's quite ambitious indeed, La, and maybe also the reason why you're successful today. So this will be my final question. Based on your experience and knowledge, please share with our listeners some practical tips and advice for those aspiring to start their business.
Yeah, if I share my experience, in the start of this conversation, I said I can now feel that the entrepreneurship skills had been in me from a long time. But luckily, I feel good that I haven't started business that time. And relating to the failure of businesses, new starters, not able to come up in the market, especially in Bhutanese market, I feel that you shouldn't start business when you don't have money. Because the chances of you dying is very, very high compared to your success. And then if you are into a financial ditch, you are gone forever, right? So that's one. And do business in what you are good at. And still, if you want to invest because you have disposable income, invest in others' idea that you can comprehend. For example, as simple as education business, for any layman, it feels like it's a very, very easy job, very low investment business. But when you are working on numbers, this is where things become very complicated. If someone thinks that, yes, I can be a very professional, I have a passion, I have a drive for this kind of business, and I can deliver, then only they have to. And constant upgradation in skills development is at the heart of every success. So if you want to be successful, if you want to be ahead of competition, you need to skill up in keeping up to the market pace. But if you want to prove in the world that you are one of the richest, I think any business ideas dependent on the size of Bhutan, I think we are limiting ourselves. So don't only base your business ideas for Bhutan. Go beyond the boundary. We also have one primitive thinking which always undermines ourselves, understates ourselves. Who knows? Given the opportunity, yes, we are able to prove. Being a Bhutanese, we have so many things that we don't treasure. And lastly, try to diversify your investment portfolio. Don't always rely on one business. If you are successful in that business, take this money, invest in others. Even if you're failing in other business, then you will be able to make up from here and there. So these are some of the experiences that I have gained and happy to share about. And I'm sharing all this, whether you want to take it, it's up to you. Whether you want to discard it, it's up to you. But if one or two can pick up anything from this conversation, I would definitely love to wish you a very successful career ahead.
Lars, thank you very much for the practical advice coming from an experienced businessman. Thank you very much for your time. We wish you more success.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Sonam. Thank you so much and happy weekend.